These tailored treatments interfere with cancer cells in different ways. Some disrupt the complex communication system that helps cancer cells function.
In some of these targeted therapies, they cover a receptor on the surface of the cell, which otherwise causes a signal of the cell to keep growing. And by covering that receptor, the cell no longer has the signal to grow and dies off.
Other targeted therapies block the growth of new blood vessels that feed tumors.
Cancer cells, like all growing things, require nutrients. They get those nutrients by way of blood vessels. And this new blood vessel growth is known in science as angiogenesis.
Doctors now have drugs at their disposal that block angiogenesis and essentially starve cancer cells. It's a far cry from the traditional approach to fighting cancer, which often meant treating all patients the same way.
We're moving from a one-size-fits-all approach for many of these cancers to very personalized therapy in patients where we can match the biology of their disease with specific treatments that benefit them.
One of the earliest examples of where biology was matched with an effective treatment was in the fight against breast cancer.
Over 40,000 women each year die of this disease. Many of them are middle-aged women, moms who have children, or are still in the prime of their adult life.
43-year-old Jessica Criss of Rhode Island is just such a woman. She was diagnosed with breast cancer in December 2009 after feeling a lump in her breast.
I woke up one morning and was chatting on the phone with a friend and somehow just touched myself and found a lump. And it was just strange to me because it was not a small lump. It was a fairly good-sized lump. And I thought, where did this come from? This just can't be happening. I'm 41 years old. I can't possibly, this can't possibly be cancer.
But it was. Fortunately for Jess and women like her, there's now a range of potent treatments being used to fight breast cancer.
We now have not just one treatment approach, but we can give a whole series of treatments.
Like the cancer field as a whole, these new therapies have come with a better understanding of what breast cancer is.
What I tell fellows in my clinic is view breast cancer as a boarding house where a number of criminals hang out. Some of them are petty thieves, some of them are killers. You apprehend them differently, you punish them differently.
To find a punishment for her disease, Jess Criss traveled to Boston and sought treatment from the experts at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
I'm here for my appointment.
Okay.
She was there to meet with Dr. Nancy Lin, a medical oncologist who specializes in breast cancer.
Cancer death rates are coming down. And in particular for breast cancer, the mortality rates from breast cancer have steadily declined year after year. The whole area measured about 8 to 9 centimeters.
After looking at her scans, Dr. Lin knew that treating Jess's cancer was going to be a challenge.
With Jess, her tumor was really quite large to begin with. It was actually probably even larger than we could feel by exam because there were two areas that were sort of connected in a dumbbell shape.
Yeah. Dr. Lin decided to treat Jess with chemotherapy right away to try to shrink those tumors before having surgery to remove them. But Jess had also had a tumor biopsy done, so pathologists could test her cancer for mutations that might be driving the disease. One of the most important biomarkers for breast cancer is something called HER2.
So HER2 is a protein that some cancers overexpress or make too much of. About 15 or 20% of breast cancers in the United States fall into that category. For HER2 positive cancer, it turns out that HER2 makes the cancer tick.
And being HER2 positive has, in the past, often been synonymous with a poor prognosis.
Tumors that are HER2 positive are more aggressive. They're more likely to grow rapidly. They're more likely to spread to the lymph nodes. They're more likely to spread to a distant site.
Being HER2 positive, although it sometimes tended to be a more aggressive cancer, it was one of the cancers that had some alternatives available.
Jess is referring to a drug developed in the 1990s that targets and disables HER2. It is called trastuzumab.
Trastuzumab is an antibody. It's an antibody that's prepared in the laboratory that specifically targets, attacks the HER2 protein on the surface of the breast cancer cell.
It works by blocking the receptor. The cell loses the signal to grow and divide, starves, and dies off.
From my understanding, this has been a drug that's helped save women's lives.
So, in conjunction with chemo, Jess also began a course of trastuzumab.
Feeling pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every 3 weeks, she went into the clinic to get an infusion of this targeted drug.
When I stepped into that phase, that's where they felt like the tumor would really melt away. And although it had shrunk, you know, a reasonable amount, as I went through that three-month period, it just really melted away. It killed it.
We saw that the tumor shrank every time I saw her. So every 3 weeks when I saw her next, it was smaller. It continued to shrink and shrink to the point where prior to surgery, I could essentially barely feel anything that was left at all.
So it's really a very, very good response.
In the summer of 2010, Jess had surgery, a mastectomy.
Even if the tumor shrunk, they had concerns about maybe a stray cell being left. And I happily agreed, you know, that that would be the right thing.
Jess endured 7 weeks of radiation therapy and continued to receive trastuzumab. She responded well, and before the year was out, there was no evidence left of her disease.
They may say remission, but I say cancer-free because after having the chemotherapy and then the mastectomy and following with radiation, really all the cancer should be gone.
According to Dr. Lin, Jess is now a survivor with a bright outlook. In her view, chemotherapy plus the targeted therapy adds up to a powerful strike force.
For those women who receive trastuzumab in combination with chemotherapy, the response to chemotherapy was dramatically improved. Adding the trastuzumab essentially doubles the chance that the tumors will shrink very substantially with the treatment.
In fact, trastuzumab and personalized medicine overall have given new hope to tens of thousands of women with breast cancer. Dr. Lin compares this progress to building a house.
We were trying to do that in the past using hand tools, and we now have power tools, and you can imagine the difference that that can make.
A difference that could mean a great deal to women like Jess. She's enjoying life again, appreciating every moment, and feeling good that she's taken steps to help stop her cancer from coming back.
Yes, of course, I'm very, very happy, yeah. I think the therapies absolutely saved my life. Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled that it all worked and that I'm gonna live, yeah. To say I'm happy is an understatement.
Similar successes are now being seen in patients with advanced colon cancer.
Up until about a decade ago, we had no targeted therapies for colon cancer. All we had was fairly nonspecific, fairly toxic chemotherapies.
But researchers have learned what drives many colon cancers and have identified good biomarkers that can guide treatment for some patients. People like Scott Cameron. Simply looking at him, you'd never know he's got cancer.
I feel fine. I feel a little out of shape in a way that lots of middle-aged people do, but other than that, I feel fine.
Watching him frolic on the beach with their four kids, his wife Margie has to agree. Sometimes she even forgets that he's sick.
He doesn't really look like somebody who's living with cancer. I look at him and there's sort of that disconnect between what I know is going on inside and what I see.
Scott's 49. He's been living with colon cancer for more than 5 years.
I was 44, so it was a bolt from the blue. I have a long-lived family, had been living a healthy life, so didn't have any reason to expect that kind of surprise.
Colon cancer is the third most common cancer in men and women, and the second most deadly.
Colon cancer can be a silent killer. It can grow very large as an orange or a grapefruit, before you even know it's there.
Scott's colon cancer crept up on him.
I was running 3 days before I was diagnosed. I had no idea what was coming. I had had a week of very small changes in my bowel, and then a week later, my bowels basically stopped. The last weekend, I was uncomfortable and I didn't know why or what was going on.
When he developed a fever, Scott finally went to the ER, and doctors found a tumor blocking his colon.
The mass in my bowel was on point of breaking out, and once the colon ruptures, then you're really in big trouble. So I had emergency surgery a little bit later that day.
Surgeons removed the tumor from Scott's colon, but the cancer had already spread to his liver.
I really felt shock. It was almost an out-of-body experience. I was stunned.
Your mind just goes to the absolute worst place, and for us it did very quickly. And so we kind of had this sense that, you know, maybe Scott could die within months.
Dr. Lee Rosen was going to do everything he could to make sure that didn't happen.
Scott's diagnosis in 2005, we're not smarter than we are here in 2011. So at the moment of his diagnosis, we were trying to understand what type of cancer he had and where it was.
Realizing the cancer had spread, Rosen put Scott on a cocktail of conventional chemotherapy drugs.
At the beginning of his diagnosis, we really used the standard aggressive combination of drugs that was going to be covering both bases of local disease or metastatic disease.
Effective, but also hard to take.
The main symptoms of my chemo, or at least the main effects of my chemo, were that I was very, very tired, nauseous sometimes, for several days at a time.
Not long ago, chemotherapy was the only treatment option for patients with metastatic colon cancer.
Now we have a whole array of different kinds of drugs that can be very effective in treating colon cancer, even in their advanced stage.
Two of those new drugs are cetuximab and panitumumab, both designed to prevent the cancer from growing by blocking a biomarker called EGFR.
EGFR is the epidermal growth factor receptor. It's one of those catcher's mitts on a cancer cell that catches a circulating protein and drives the growth of the cancer and the spread of the cancer.
Like smart bombs, these drugs target the tumor and surrounding area and are designed to spare healthy tissue from damage.
It turns out that if you look at all patients with colorectal cancer, these drugs, cetuximab and panitumumab, work very, very well. But for some, it doesn't do anything.
These days, doctors actually have a way of finding out in advance which patients will benefit and which patients won't.
We've discovered that there's this genetic marker called a KRAS mutation. 60% of patients with colon cancer have the regular type of the gene, which means that 40% have a mutation.
The ones with the mutation don't respond well to either drug.
It's a very black and white way of looking at patients. If you have the gene, you get the drug. If you don't have the gene, you don't get the drug.
Scott tested positive for a KRAS mutation, and so doctors determined he would not be a good candidate for either drug.
When I first found out that I couldn't have that treatment, it was crushing. But the nice thing about that is that you don't spend, you know, several months on a drug that is not going to help you.